Welcome to the Business of Security podcast, brought to you by TrustMap for Security Performance Management. Your hosts are Chad Beckman and Malcolm Harkins. Today, they talk with Drew Spaniel with ICIT, Jim Russell and Paul Phillips, both with Microchip Technology. Now let's get to it.
What does the industry need to start talking about that we're not doing today?
Information technology is built on a horrible foundation. If we could sort of redo and start from the beginning, we would be so much better off.
If you don't invest in it, keep it running, it will blow up.
But you also have to be able to go in with solutions, not just problems. We have a long way to go if we're going to win this fight.
At the end of the day, educated people are really the best countermeasure against all the threats.
Welcome to the Business of Security podcast. This is your host, Chad Beckman. Joining me, as always, is Malcolm Harkins. Malcolm, welcome to the podcast again. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Chad. Happy to be here.
And today we have three special guests with us. We have Drew Spaniel, we have Jim Russell, and we have Paul Phillips. And I'm going to allow each of them to give their own introduction. But before we do so, I want to let everybody know that this is the second series of a multi-series on IoT cybersecurity. And we're speaking today about the regulatory landscape of IoT cybersecurity, the implications of this, and considerations as well, from not only industrial defense perspective, but also a consumer standpoint. So we'll dive into topics on each one of those. And with that, I'd like to get started and introduce yourself, please, Drew. Give us your name and perhaps your role and organization.
Thanks. I'm Drew Spaniel. I'm the lead researcher with the Institute for Critical Infrastructure Technology, or ICIT is where our abbreviation.
Thank you, Drew. And Jim.
Yeah, hey, Chad. Thanks for having me back. My name is Jim Russell. I work for a company called Microchip Technology, along with Paul. We're a leading total system solution provider for smart, connected, and secure electronic devices. I lead a group of engineers worldwide that help our customers be successful when designing their electronic devices that are connected to also be secure, which is very important.
And Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Chad. So my name's Paul Phillips. As Jim said, we both work at Microchip. My particular role is I'm a principal ESE, or Embedded Solution Engineer. So working directly with customers, particularly in the embedded and IoT space, to help them, you know, secure their products, think about secure by design and, you know, getting it in there from day one. And prior to Microchip, I spent 20 plus years doing embedded and IoT products designs. So.
Excellent. Thank you all. Thank you, Drew, Jim, and Paul. So the topic today, in contrast to last episode, of course, being the culture of IoT cybersecurity, today we're going to dive into the topic of regulation and standards around securing the IoT landscape. So if we want to kind of talk about the regulatory requirements, perhaps, Paul, I know the UK is leading in this area over likely most of the rest of the world, just in terms of regulation. Could you perhaps give us a high-level overview of what currently exists in the UK today?
Yeah, sure. Maybe UK and Europe as well, because we're sort of trying to team up to get a harmonized approach. So from a UK standpoint, it really started back early in 2018, around March 2018, where a particular department within the UK government, which is called DCMS, actually put some guidelines out and a code of practice all around IoT security, and really what manufacturers should be thinking about when they're designing IoT products, really with a goal to, you know, protect the end consumer, who's still not really thinking, you know, or aware of IoT security at the moment. That got published, as I said, in sort of 2018. The UK government then lined up with the European bodies, particularly an outfit called ETSI, or the European Telecommunications Standards Institute, which is a little bit like equivalent to NIST that you guys have got. And they got together and came up with a common framework, which has now been published earlier this year. It came out at the end of July. and it's a European standard. So it's an EN or European norm, and the number is 303645. And it basically has 13 different elements that a manufacturer should consider as part of an IoT, a secure IoT design and product. The first three right now within that standard are no default passwords, which I think we've all been familiar with, especially with, you know, Mirai botnets and other things that have occurred previously. Looking at vulnerability disclosures and making sure that as a manufacturer, you have that in place. So your consumers or customers can come to you to find out about vulnerabilities, or even for researchers to report vulnerabilities. And then the third area is all around software updates, keeping regular updates, and in fact, even declaring to consumers how long you're going to support a product for, so that they know, you know, from the day they purchase it, they can expect to get, you know, updates for the next, I don't know, 2 to 3 years, whatever. So those three is what the UK government are now looking at moving towards legislation. And there's a call for vote, as they use the phrase in the UK, is out right now. So everyone's got until the 6th of September this year to go back to the UK government, because they've actually put proposals out saying this is how we're going to enforce it, and this is what we expect manufacturers to follow.
Is there a timeline on when manufacturers might be required to comply should this be instituted?
Yeah, so they've put that as part of the proposal. So basically, as I said, we've got to the 6th of September for everyone to feedback. I'm expecting that will go into legislation later this year, probably towards the end of the year, maybe early next. But then what they've said is from the moment it hits legislation, 3 months later, they'll introduce the first requirement, which is for a vulnerability disclosure policy. Then 3 months after that, they'll introduce the second one, which is to basically declare to consumers the software update side of things and how long you're going to maintain the product for. And then 3 months later, no default passwords. So they're going to bring them in a phased approach.
So essentially, throughout 2021, there will be requirement for full compliance on these three key points you just highlighted.
Correct. Yeah. And what they've also signaled is that going forward, so probably at some point in, 22, 23, they'll then take the next ones off the list of 13 and slowly introduce those. So I'd expect like a rolling program coming out from the UK government every 3 to 4 months. They'll introduce, another part of the requirement that manufacturers will, have to follow.
So let me ask you this. What kind of impact does this have to manufacturers of IoT devices and perhaps even the resellers of those devices? Has there been any discussion in the industry on who's going to maintain or have ultimate liability and responsibility to manage these requirements?
Yeah, great question. So in the legislative document, they actually refer to everyone as the producer. And what it basically says is the producer is assumed to be the manufacturer. But if the manufacturer is not UK-based, or if they don't have any representative within the UK, then it actually says the importer then becomes the responsible person. So therefore, retail establishments would have the responsibility of, if they're importing products from offshore into the UK, to ensure that they actually follow those guidelines, and they could be held responsible, if they don't.
That's a significant impact, and it'll be very interesting to see how these controls essentially become adopted. When you think about IoT cybersecurity and the overall management, I immediately draw a correlation to the medical device field and how over the last year and a half, 2 years, real recent, in fact, medical devices have had to really shore up their security when a IoT enabled device that's embedded in a body like a pacemaker can be adjusted by the doctor and having proper controls around that. And so there might be some similarities between that type of architecture and security controls and perhaps what is just now emerging in the IoT cybersecurity market. Does anybody on the podcast here have any thoughts? Is there any correlation that you see between the two industries?
Hey, Chad, this is Malcolm. I think you're right. There is, you know, the basics of a security development lifecycle, regardless, right, that need to be put in place. And I think the medical field, just because of the life and death consequences of that type of really personal computing device in your body that's connected, has a lot more at stake. And so I think they're making strides there. At the same time, in other medical devices, there was just, it was a year or so ago, Israeli researchers showed and demoed malicious code that could go to an MRI machine and basically fake a tumor. So give false diagnosis, right? So I think when we look at this, we have to look at all angles of quote unquote the attack surface and what then could be the consequences of how those attacks could manifest themselves in ways of harm.
Yeah, Malcolm, I think you really hit the nail on the head there. Consequence drives urgency.
It also sometimes works in reverse, where security and privacy controls are kind of disregarded because there is a fear of what if in a critical moment this is more of a barrier than a life-saving technology. Like if the security or the privacy control could delay critical treatment by seconds, there will be resistance within the healthcare community and specifically within the healthcare IoT community.
Right, and with healthcare, when the consequences are obvious, how does that then draw to, say, a connected light bulb or light switch? Without some sort of regulation, the perception of consequence if your light bulb stops working is pretty light. And the inspiration for the regulations upcoming are really kind of the added consequence for products that don't have a life or death type of a consequence built in.
Let's hear from Kirk Nara, partner with WilmerHale Law Firm and co-chair of Global Privacy and Cybersecurity Practice. Here's Kirk.
I don't think we would be in a position where you want consumers to choose security, right? You can choose to receive marketing materials as a privacy issue, and you could, some people are going to want to say yes, some people are going to want to say no. I don't know that legally we want to give anybody the ability to say, nah, I won't. I want the less secure version of a pacemaker. I want the less secure version of the car's controls. And so I think what you're probably trying to do in IoT cybersecurity is come up with some kind of a dashboard or something that conveys basic information, A, conveys basic information, and B, probably has companies meet some kind of defined standard where they can make, essentially the equivalent of what in the old days would be the Good Housekeeping seal of approval. And that actually makes a lot more sense in security than it might on privacy. There are people who would like to see something like that on privacy, but we haven't gotten there yet on privacy. Maybe we can get there on security, and I think it makes a lot more sense on the security side.
Let's just kind of step back for just a second and think about, some solutions. How would an organization, a manufacturing of these devices or a retailer, to Paul's point, actually begin to implement the proper controls where previously, these types of devices at the firmware level, we're talking a lot of hardware embedded chip type technology that's being distributed, of course. How do we begin to manage this architecturally and even from a process standpoint where, this has never been a concern before, but now it suddenly is. Not only, from a availability perspective, of course, the CIA triad, as they say in security, the confidentiality, integrity, availability, but in some cases, perhaps even in the context of national security, depending on where what devices are embedded and how they are connected to the internet. So how do we go about extending our network, essentially is my question, and protecting that extended network? can we apply the same kind of methodologies that we have from a, let's say, securing web servers to the IoT space, adopting these regulatory requirements, such as which is being proposed in the broader EU? Or does a new type of approach need to be thought through carefully to make this essentially effective and scalable at the scale that we're talking about here?
Definitely think that we need something that is maybe a little more mandatory or regulatory. But I guess maybe now would be a good time to mention NIST actually has two frameworks relating to IoT. NIST IR 8228, Considerations for Managing Internet of Things, Cybersecurity and Privacy Risks, which is predominantly focused around personnel at federal agencies with responsibilities related to the managing of cybersecurity and privacy risks for IoT devices. So in at least a federal capacity, there is some NIST guidance, but again, it is a voluntary framework. The other piece that NIST has come out with recently, and I believe it's in its second draft, is NIST IR 8259, Recommendations for IoT Device Manufacturers, Foundational Activities, and Core Device Cybersecurity Capability Baseline. That actually does try to provide much more of a framework approach for IoT device manufacturers that's focused around the use case. But again, it is a voluntary framework, and it's not really clear how that framework would apply to device manufacturers who are not, you know, in the United States, who maybe don't care as much about NIST. It does at least a decent baseline approach to addressing privacy of IoT devices and security for IoT devices from a device manufacturer level looking at the consumer level.
It's Paul. I was just going to add, actually, when you look at the 8259, it also references back to the new European standard that we've now got. So the EN 303-645 is referenced from that NIST document. So they do line up quite nicely. But I completely agree with you, and I think where the UK government's coming from, we've had these documents over in Europe around for, you know, at least 2 years, but there's no incentive, there's no desire for a manufacturer to implement them unless they absolutely have to. And the consumers right now aren't thinking that way, and therefore it's not pulling it. So I think that's what's causing the governments to react, particularly the UK government, because we don't want, you know, thousands, potentially millions of, you know, vulnerable IoT nodes, which could then be turned into a botnet to attack other systems.
Right. And maybe a more succinct way of or summarizing what I had just said is that 8259 provide some excellent recommendations and guidelines for how to approach IoT, cybersecurity, and privacy for that matter, but it hasn't been turned into any form of evaluation mechanism. It's not like NIST has written it in such a way that it very easily could be turned into sort of an evaluation tool, but no one has mandated that yet, as far as I'm aware.
So similar to taking NIST 853, which a lot of our listeners are familiar with, or NIST cybersecurity framework, and measuring the security of those controls based on your environment. Is that essentially what you're referring to, Drew?
Yeah, for 853, and I believe for many other NIST frameworks, but I think also for even 800-160, there are sort of standalone testing mechanisms or certification mechanisms that you can sort of, you know, hand to an external auditor or even to your own design team and say, you know, is this device or network or system compliant? And I think 8259 is written in such a way that it could very easily be transformed into that kind of testing mechanism, but I haven't seen. And I'm not saying it's not out there, but I haven't seen anyone do that. I don't believe there is any incentive right now to do that, I should say.
So what I do know from a European point of view, now that they've got that standard out, that same working group and are working on a second document, which at the moment is TS 107301. And basically, it's going to be written for test labs to show how to do an assessment of a product against the 303.645 standard. So that's exactly where they're going next from a European point of view. And the target to get that guidance out is the end of year.
So that speaks strongly to this whole notion that, you know, I'm very passionate about, of security performance management, continual measurement of the security posture and continual improvement thereof. And it'll be very interesting to see, Paul, to your point, of the guidance they'll release on how to conduct the measurements based on the requirements that hasn't quite been passed yet. So I'll be tuning in and watching closely as that unfolds. Now, Drew, could you speak briefly to what the U.S. might have in works? And is there any similar regulation coming from our own judicial system to manage and regulate the IoT landscape?
Yeah, so I think it may be meaningful to jump back about a year. ICIT and the Internet Association, Public Citizen, the Massachusetts Tech Leadership Council, Rapid7, Cyber Reason, and a number of other organizations had all endorsed a piece of legislation called the Cyber Shield Act that came out of Senator Ed Markey's office and on the House side, Representative Ted Lieu's office. The Cyber Shield Act basically took the, I'm going to refer to it as the Energy Star approach, because I'm a young millennial. I've heard some other people refer to it as a different approach. I forget what that model is called. But essentially, it's a consumer-focused piece of legislation that applies a dynamic security rating to IoT devices. That would basically be, it would change over time, right? As new vulnerabilities were reported, and as the device progressed through its life cycle, consumers would be able to check the security of their device through by scanning a QR code or going to a website on a label. And essentially, it was sort of a market incentive to both educate the public on cyber hygiene and actually caring about privacy and security concerns, but also to sort of hold device manufacturers' feet to the fire, because it's a, if it's a prisoner's dilemma in a sense, right? If nobody does it, the framework is meaningless, but if the device manufacturer doesn't do it and their competitor does, it gives consumers something that they may, purchase the device that does it instead of. It's a market incentive. Now, I don't believe that piece of legislation passed. I imagine it's going to be reintroduced in the future. But it was a step in the right direction for at least the IoT landscape. There have been a couple of more recent pieces of legislation. I believe in January of 2020, the Digit Act passed and went to the House, basically in protecting federal networks from the risk of IoT devices. But for a focus on the consumer space, really the Cyber Shield Act was is the bill that stuck in my mind. The other piece of state legislation that is worth a mention here would be the California IoT security law that I believe took effect in January of 2020. It sort of starts to introduce some regulations on IoT devices and some consumer protections. The bill did have maybe some shortcomings with regards to how it defines different things. Its definition, it requires device manufacturers to have a reasonable security features, but that definition is very broad and it's very open to interpretation, which, on one hand could make it difficult for organizations to comply with, but on the other hand, it kind of gives a little too much leeway, because it's a loophole in a sense, right? An organization can say, oh, I'm sure we met that standard, it's just we interpret that different than the consumer or from a legal perspective.
Yeah, exactly. That's where, the details matter, essentially. How you achieve those outcomes or those requirements matters. You know, that's ultimately why, for example, the payment card industry instituted the PCI standard for managing, you know, security around payment cards, because people believed they were doing the right things. Too many breaches were occurring, a lot of financial losses, and there needed to be a single way to secure and set expectations of how everybody was going to protect that data. And I see a very similar approach here in what is emerging into the IoT landscape for the cybersecurity controls. Now, Paul, I want to jump back to you for a moment and get your perspective based on, you know, obviously where you live, but also what your knowledge is with the broader EU and in the UK requirements. How can an organization, or how would you advise an organization start preparing themselves for, you know, whether the regulation as is gets approved or some modified version gets approved? What can organizations begin to consider or think about now in terms of being ready once the deadlines are released?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think part of the challenge for the sort of embedded space in general is that we're sort of lagging behind the approach in IT. So, you know, some of the things that we were talking about earlier with, you know, secure development life cycles, they're absolutely applicable in the embedded world. But not a lot of manufacturers are really aware of them or have, you know, actually thought about deploying them as part of their product development. So I think I'd encourage, you know, there's other organizations, the IoT Security Foundation is another great one based in the UK that, again, for a number of years have put guidance documents out to explain even concepts like the CIA triad, because, again, in the embedded world, people aren't thinking that way. And the foundation actually this week have now produced additional guidance, you know, specifically for those new three areas that's coming out by the UK government, saying here's what manufacturers should do next. Actually, they're working with the Oxford University to also set up a website that smaller, you know, manufacturers, SMEs could use as a vulnerability disclosure platform, so they wouldn't have to implement their own. So, you know, I'd encourage everyone to, you know, go out, look at this material, start understanding it, but ultimately take a step back and think about that whole secure by design, you know, preparing your product from day one to get software updates. Because in a lot of cases, some of these older IoT products, which now manufacturers are, you know, in quotes, simply connecting to the internet, they're not actually really thinking through the consequences. And, you know, some of those products are designed with very, very low amounts of memory, certain compared to the IT world. So, you know, you're talking of hundreds and Ks of memory, you know, maybe, you know, 512 in a larger one. And now suddenly they've got to do a firmware update, which means I probably have to keep two copies of the firmware, because if I get a power failure when I'm partway through, I don't want to break the product. And now suddenly the whole design, the architecture of this, you know, solution has to change. So I think that's the biggest challenge that we've got in the embedded space, is to get people thinking, you know, from day one to what they need to include in their product to make it secure and to be able to protect it in the future with updates.
And in addition to the actual design, the supply chain needs to be considered as well. And what type of, you know, if you're going to use a secure element, for instance, the manufacturing process would either need to have its own mechanism for pre-provisioning, or with Microchip's Trust Platform, for example, these devices can be pre-provisioned with their own unique identity. So the supply chain also needs to be considered, not just the devices on the circuit board.
Oh, yeah. Great point, Jim.
To kind of add into it, and Paul, what you're saying, I think certainly updating is a critical component. But I think as we all know, that could be implemented in a way that's also highly insecure, and subjects the device to getting malicious updates. And so there's not only the software updating process, but the doing that in a secure fashion so that it's less susceptible to being hijacked and a malicious update taken by the user or the device because they didn't understand what they were updating. And so that channel of updates is critically as important as providing an updating capability.
Absolutely. And part of the legislation, when you read the documents, they do have guidance in there for manufacturers and, you know, introduce some of the concepts of digitally signing the firmware so, you know, you can prove its authenticity. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right.
This is a brave new space for sure. And there's a lot happening and a lot that is going to change over the next several months. So to our listeners, stay tuned. We're going to be speaking more about this in the coming episodes. And before we conclude, I just want to quickly do a roundtable with everyone and ask if there's one piece of advice or action that our listeners can take today who are concerned about the IoT cybersecurity and perhaps the regulations that are forthcoming. What would that be? And perhaps, Drew, I'll put you on the spot and start with you.
I'm gonna maybe cheat a little bit here, and I'm hoping I'm not stepping on the other speaker's points. I think that maybe I have a piece of advice for different stakeholders in this dynamic. I think for device manufacturers, I would recommend turning, like, obviously security is going to add cost, right? And no one wants to do it without an incentive. But I think device manufacturers who are conscious that regulation will happen eventually should start turning, including security, and turning it into a marketing feature now. What that's going to help catalyze is, I think for the consumer space, we have to get consumers to care about security and privacy. That has to happen, you know, on their own, but also through education. And I think in the federal space, in the legislative space, you know, legislators need to consider that a lot of this, the onus of responsibility for security and privacy does fall to them. Without a stick to go with a carrot, so to speak, I don't think we're going to see meaningful change. And I think we're getting to a point in this digital age where we need, you know, some built-in protections for consumers, because otherwise, you know, their consumers are kind of used as scapegoats, in the sense of a breach happens and they're just collateral damage because their data happened to be captured. So that's sort of, I guess, my maybe advice for each stakeholder.
Thank you, Drew. Jim.
Yeah, Chad, I think and we discussed this on our last call, but I think that really security by design, starting from the beginning with your minimum viable product to have the maximum viable security in that design, as well as making sure the whole operation of manufacturing devices is ready and prepared for upcoming things, you know, from logistics to supply chain and manufacturing all the way to the design of the actual electronic device. Be prepared, I guess, from the very beginning.
Excellent. And Paul?
Yeah, I agree with the other two guys. I guess, you know, I think it's what you could do, and picking up on Drew's comment, I think manufacturers, you know, security is coming. You got to start engaging with it and, you know, design it into your products. But potentially, it could be a competitive advantage. So, you know, really think of it from that standpoint rather than, oh, it's more work to do, it's additional cost. Actually turn it into a benefit. But I agree, I think our ultimate target is to try and get consumers more aware and educate them to, you know, buy the products that are more secure to look after their data.
Well said. Thank you all. And that wraps it for this episode of the Business of Security podcast. I want to thank our guests, Drew Spaniel, Jim Russell, and Paul Phillips. And of course, my co-host, Malcolm Harkins. Thank you for listening, and until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Security podcast, brought to you by TrustMap. We want to hear from our listeners. If you have a topic you'd like to discuss on the podcast or would like to continue the conversation, please connect with us on Twitter @CyberSecPodcast. or email us at businessofsecurity@trustsds.com. We want to extend a special thanks to today's guests, Drew Spaniel, Jim Russell, and Paul Phillips. Our hosts today were Chad Beckman, founder of TrustMap, and Malcolm Harkins, Chief Security and Trust Officer at Cymatic. You can connect with both Chad and Malcolm on LinkedIn and learn more about TrustMap at trustmap.com. You can find out more about Malcolm and Cymatic at cymatic.io. Our show is produced by Dan Rollins with LiveWire Films. You can connect with Dan on LinkedIn and learn more about LiveWire Films at livewirefilms.com. Now stay tuned for our next episode of the Business of Security podcast. And that's a wrap.